Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. The Be Fulfilled Journal helps you be more honest with yourself and with others and be more open to handling things you've avoided dealing with for years. It's a 12-week online and journal program that helps you identify and eliminate things you do that are causing you stress and live in more gratitude and joy. It was actually developed by a long-term friend of mine who got sober in 2008, and he's put together a great deal just for my listeners. You get the 300-page hardcover journal and access to the 12-week video program online, plus free shipping, plus membership in a private Facebook support group with others going through the program, plus a 5-day mini course showing you how to let go of stuff that's draining your energy, plus a 30-day 100% money-back guarantee. To start your journey and get all the bonuses, go to befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. That's befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. For information about advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, including information on geographically targeted ads, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, this is Craig. Just want to let you know the first 6.5 minutes of this interview are a little sketchy audio-wise. After that, everything clears right up. So thanks for bearing with it. It's a great interview. Talk to you soon. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. And we've got a really talented and interesting and cool guitar player out of California, Janet Robin. Before we go forward, I just want to thank Pi Jacobs for connecting us. Pi connected us, I think, right?
Yeah. Hi, Pi.
Janet is a Southern California native, and she took guitar lessons from Randy Rhoads, parlayed that education into a position as the lead guitarist for the all-female rock band Precious Metal. Precious Metal released several albums with two major labels, and she wound up writing with Heart, Poison, and Cheap Trick, and toured extensively. After Precious Metal, she was picked by Fleetwood Mac guitarist Lindsey Buckingham to join his band in support of his 1992 solo album, Out of the Cradle. Encouraged by Lindsey, she then released her own debut solo album in 98 called Open the Door on her own label. She supported that disc touring by opening for Heart, Colin Hay, Loudon Wainwright III, and the Smithereens, steadily building a wide fan base. She's since continued touring heavily and averages as many as 150 days per year. Are you still on that schedule?
I've gone down a little bit. Yeah. But yeah, I do a lot of touring, especially in Europe.
That's really cool.
A lot in Europe.
That's great. Janet's continued releasing records. In 2012, she released Everything Has Changed. John Carter Cash produced that record, and he's Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash's child, and he also produced the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. They recorded this at Cash Cabin Studios outside of Nashville, which is where Cash actually recorded much of his later work, and Johnny Cash recorded much of his later work, including his final recording, American, is it American V or American 5? I never knew.
I think it's American 5 Rubin produced. Yeah.
Yeah, right. What a great record. Janet has since had several successful headlining tours, as she just mentioned, in Europe, in the Czech Republic, Poland, Germany, England, and France, where she plays solo acoustic shows and with her band to sold-out crowds and clubs and festivals throughout Europe. She's toured, performed with, or recorded or written songs with Tommy Emmanuel, Peppino D'Agostino, who was on this show a few months back, Meredith Brooks.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah, he's a good guy. We had a really good conversation. He was a good dude.
He's a cool guy, yeah.
Monty Montgomery, Michelle Schacht, Ann and Nancy Wilson of Heart, and many more. She was also the touring guitarist for Air Supply and has played features at LA NAMM Show. In 2017, she was named in Guitar Player's Top 50 Acoustic Guitarist. She's also had her original songs placed in TV and films. In January 2015, she was handpicked to coach and consult actress Jennifer Jason Leigh for 2 months on location and in Los Angeles for a special guitar scene in the Quentin Tarantino film, The Hateful Eight. And Jennifer was then nominated for an Academy Award. You weren't nominated for an Academy Award, right?
No, not for guitar coach. They don't have that category yet.
What was?
But I'm talking to them about it.
Occupy guitar coach. What was that like working with Quentin Tarantino?
Well, he's a genius, but like all geniuses, you know, they're a little crazy.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah. What was his crazy?
He's a perfectionist.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
Well, he's a perfectionist, you know, and he's just very passionate, and you can tell he's really in it, not really for the money. He's in it, you know, for the work. I mean, he's a workaholic. He works hard, and it was a very interesting experience, the whole thing.
How'd you get selected for that?
Well, it's funny because my teaching, some of my teaching led to that. I taught this guy's daughter who knows a lot of people in the business out here, and Quentin's music supervisor called a big agent at an agency out here who knew the guy that I taught his daughter, and so I got referred.
That's wild. Isn't it weird how those like dots connect sometimes?
It's the craziest thing ever, you know. It's I always tell people, you know, if you want to survive in this business, you know, you just have to keep doing it. But I mean, it's really the bottom line. You have to just keep doing it.
Yeah.
You meet more and more people along the way, you know.
Totally.
And basically say yes to everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, no, you have to be in front of people. This is definitely more of a people business than almost anything else I've been, you know, you're not going to make money sitting in your studio behind your computer and that's it.
No.
For sure.
No. I mean, I can be a little bit more selective now, but
sure.
Yeah, earlier I just said yes to everything and I figured it out later.
Very cool. Janet's current main side project is called The String Revolution. They've released 2 albums. And by the way, Janet's released 7 solo records as well, and we'll talk about those later. The String Revolution's newest release is called Red Drops. It's a really beautiful record. It reached the top 10 on Spotify instrumental charts for Los Angeles and also made it into the Grammy entry ballot. The band's been selling out local LA venues and has performed at major festivals such as Laguna Beach Art Festival and special performances at NAMM headquarters, and an international tour is up next. So when are you doing that?
Well, we're working on that right now. We've been talking to the Sydney Guitar Festival, the one in Australia. And there's a couple of big ones out in Australia. So we're trying to make that happen for 2020.
That's great. It's a really good record. It's really good. It's like a ton of talent.
Thank you.
Dripping out of that thing, man.
Thank you.
Janet, let me try to restart my computer because this thing is just too fuzzy and it shouldn't be. I mean, this is just frustrating. And I don't want to have bad audio on either side, but it's going to be on your side especially, and I don't want that. I'm really sorry.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Do you mind if I just
restart?
Do that? Yeah.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. So one quick question about Randy. What was the most important or some of the more important guitar and non-guitar related lessons that you learned from working with Randy? Because I've read interviews with you and I know you learned a lot from him.
Well, I think a lot of people don't realize that Randy was actually a very good blues guitar player. And, you know, any guitar player would know, no matter what style of music you play now, that, you know, all of what we do on guitar now comes from blues. So literally the first lick that I ever learned was like Chuck Berry, Johnny B. Goode.
Very cool.
You know, so we did a lot of blues stuff in the very beginning lessons of learning, you know, rock guitar and lead guitar, blues licks, things like that. So there's that. Then there was a couple of they're all related to guitar, but you know, the way our lessons went as years went by would be he would come up with a progression, and then, you know, he would show me the progression. I would play the chord progression, and he would be like, doing his thing, and then I'd be like, my jaw would be on the ground, it's my 10-year-old jaw, on the ground. I'd be like, oh my God, just crazy. And, then he would proceed to show me some of those techniques.
Okay.
Within his solo playing, whether it was like pinching or, the pull-offs that he would do, things like that. So there was that. He was so good that I actually, would bring my neighbors and friends to my lessons. and an interesting note too, lessons were all 30 minutes for everybody. And I think my lessons started out at like $7.
Oh my God. $7 a lesson with Randy Rhodes.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it like went up. I think it maybe ended up at 10 or something. I can't remember by the time he got the gig. I mean, I was with him from age 9 until 15, till he got the gig with Ozzy. As far as the non-lesson things, not related to guitar per se that I learned from him, honestly, I mean, I'm not sure if he meant to give it to me or not, but really was just confidence and self-esteem. Because you're talking about late 70s, 1977, 78, when I started with him. At the time, I was the only girl. I think he had like one other girl down the line, but she didn't stay doing lessons very long. I was also the youngest student. And, I come from a family of two older brothers, who used to kind of bat me around. And, my lesson was like a sanctuary because there was this man, right, teaching me something super cool. And I wanted to be super cool because I was just wanting, I needed something, my brothers wouldn't let me play with them. I wasn't that good in sports. I was kind of a tomboy. I didn't, I wasn't like into dolls or any of that crap. Yeah. I tried everything. I tried like dance class. I tried karate, once I found that I really was attracted to the guitar and I felt like, oh, this is something I could be really good at. I like it. And I loved music. He kind of just, could care less whether I was a girl or how old I was. It was very straight. Like, listen, you practice, you're going to be great. You're going to be just as good as me. I mean, he would say things like that. And you got to think when you're that young, at least my experience growing up, I needed that. And I have great parents, but I really needed something like that. And he made me feel like I could really do it. I could really get good at this.
That's so good. Yeah, everybody needs that when you're doing something outside. It has nothing to, even if your parents are great, it has nothing to do with your parents. And, you're now in the big, bad world, and that's really cool.
I didn't really know of that many female rock guitar players at that time. Mm. I mean, there was Nancy Wilson from Heart, and I did see some of those posters in my brother's room. So she was like the only one. And I mean, she's a great guitar player, but as far as, I'm talking about, lead guitar and all this stuff there. I mean, Joan Jett wasn't even out yet. She doesn't play lead guitar. She only plays rhythm.
Sure.
So there was nobody. Nobody. There was no Lita Ford. There was nobody.
Pinky Tescadero.
No, yeah.
what's her?
Not Pinky.
Susie Quattro. Yeah.
Leather Tuscadero.
That's
but,
right.
But here's, and I loved her too. I thought she was totally rad. But this is the thing. She was a bass player. Susie's a bass player. I have a story about Susie, by the way. I have her shirt.
Go ahead. Now you got to spill the beans. Go ahead.
Well, we were at this conference. It was like a rocker girl conference, all these girls in rock and roll.
When was this?
Not too long ago, maybe about 4 years ago.
Okay.
And she was one of the speakers. She was like getting some kind of award. And we were all partying afterwards, And she was wearing this killer shirt that had like skulls all over it, And I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And I kept going up to her and I'm like, that's a totally awesome shirt, you know? And she's like, oh, thank you. And then I kept like bugging her about it. Like, I love that shirt, you know, just giving her shit about it. And then all of a sudden she takes off her shirt. She's like, all right, fine. I'm just going to give it to you. You know, and I wasn't even asking for the shirt. That's
so fun. So like in a bar or like?
Yeah. We were in the bar of the hotel or something.
That is,
you know?
So funny. So
she had like a tank top underneath, you know?
Okay.
And everybody's like, oh my God. And they all started taking photos of it. So I have a photo of it.
That is so funny. Yeah, that is so funny.
And I still have her shirt. So
that's so fun. Has it made
but
it?
Again,
to- yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'll say, hasn't made it to eBay yet.
No, I'm not selling that shit. No way.
It's, I'm just messing with you.
Quattro's
shirt. I know.
No, she's awesome. She's just such a cool person and great, just a great person. But again, you know, she's a bass player.
Bass player, yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't play guitar. So I literally had my idols growing up were males. No problem with that.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I love Jimmy Page, you know. I mean, I grew up a steady diet of Zeppelin. You know, my brother was playing that all the time and his room was right next to mine. So it was Zeppelin, Aerosmith, all of that, you know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later that women started making a little bit more noise, you know, with guitar playing.
That's really cool. So like you weren't like thinking, oh my God, I'm a girl, or were you? You just did what you liked, right? I mean,
well, that didn't happen until I got in Precious Metal.
Okay. So let's talk about that. You got in there and I think you said you were 17. And at that time, the LA scene, especially for that kind of music, was really prolific. So what? Tell me about what you were going to say about being conscious about being a woman. And
well,
then,
Craig, have you watched The Dirt?
You know what? I haven't gotten to it yet. It's in my queue.
So yeah, I watched that last week. And I'm like, hey, I know that guy. No, I'm just kidding. So yeah, I mean that starts 1982. You know, and Precious Metal got together in 83, and I was in high school. So. The whole thing, like, oh, I'm a girl guitar player. That didn't really happen till then. Although there was a point in my life when I was 14, I got this weird little TV role in a TV show.
How'd you get that? Look at you. Uh-oh. This is all this shit. You're like an onion, man. All the freaking layers are. I was in TV. Well, I got Susie Quattro's shirt.
Oh, I have stories. I told you, man. I told you. You didn't believe me. I didn't tell you. My first professional gig with my garage band was playing for John Travolta's father. So,
and what did you play?
We got paid $100 from John Travolta because his nephew was our singer.
So that was a mixed band. Okay.
Yeah. I was 11.
Wow. That's really young to be getting to do this professionally.
Well, I mean, that wasn't professional. You know, we were just jamming in the garage, you know, with these kids in elementary school. And the singer was like, my grandpa, you know, Grandpa Travolta, was having a birthday and they want us to play, you know, in his apartment complex rec room, you know, and they're going to pay us $100, you know, and so we were called Rocks, ROXX.
Yeah. That's so LA glam.
So LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have photos of that, but anyway, so yeah, we played that and John Travolta was there because he's the son, you know, and he paid us. I remember going, you know, we all went up to him and he wrote us $100 check. I mean, this is at the height of like Grease.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, oh my God, John Travolta. But okay, that's a side story. So back to when I was 14, I auditioned with the band I was in junior high for some TV pilot. They were looking for like a teen band. And we went to this audition and the director was, this happened to be a famous director that used to direct and write a show back in the 60s called Laughing.
Oh yeah, Rowan and Martin.
Right. So yeah. It was George Slaughter. He was
a
big
director.
That was
a great show. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was putting together this new show, which by the way, one of the cast members was Nick Cage.
Holy shit. But he was in everything, even back then, I guess, right?
That was the first thing he ever did.
That's wild. Young Nick Cage.
And then, yeah, we went on a date to the cast party.
Did you? How did that go? I mean, not like, well, just in general.
I was 14 and he was 17. So
yeah,
it didn't go anywhere, which I was fine with that.
Yeah, thank goodness for that.
No, but so what happened at the audition was the director kind of singled me out of the band, you know, and they wrote a little vignette part for me in this TV pilot. And I had never acted before, but that was about being a girl trying to get into a guy band. And that was the first time that I was sort of like, oh, I get it. You know, girl, I guess it's different to be a girl musician or something, you know, even though I wasn't thinking that way.
Yeah, that kind of like might have spurred you on to have thoughts or think that you didn't really need to have, actually, probably.
Right. I mean, yeah. And I was, you know, I sort of had to prove myself, you know, in that role. And so he he featured me playing, you know, some shit in that TV show. But, you know, the sexism part or whatever you want to talk about, you know, call it, didn't really happen until I got into Precious Metal. And, you know, the girl who put it together purposely wanted to put together an all-girl band. And you know, there were two girls that put it together and they were really obsessed with the Runaways. So they wanted to do like a new Runaways, but with people who could really play, you know, really, really good and just modernize the music a little bit more glam, yeah. You know, what was happening on the strip at that time. So that's how that happened. I answered an ad in a local paper out here called the Recycler. And that's how it happened.
Your parents must have been pretty supportive of your plan.
I don't know. Yes, they were supportive of my plan, but I think when they had me, they didn't realize what they were, you know, getting into.
Let me tell you, I have three kids. You never fucking realize what you're getting into because you wouldn't have done it if you realized what you're getting into. You know, I love all of them, but let me tell you, you never realize what the hell is about to happen.
I don't have children, but I get it. And yeah, I mean, they're pretty cool, you know, rather liberal parents. And I think they recognize that this made me so happy playing guitar. I mean, I was in my room practicing all the time. My mom would have to, you know, you got to eat, you know.
That's so cool.
So, yeah, I think
it's a great thing. Like
it's a great thing. And I love, that's why you asked me earlier, you know, because I do teach and, you know, what level. And I'm like, I take everybody. And I don't care whether it's adults or young kids. Learning, you know, who want to learn guitar, for me, it's guitar, but anything, because when you learn something and you work at it, you know, the payoff is that, you know, you're good. You get to play something. And that's a really great self-esteem thing. And I think it like seeps into other parts of your life.
Yeah. Self-esteem is not limited to, usually if you're confident, you're right. It tends to seep into everything.
I had a kid who was like 11, I think, when he started with me, and he was getting bullied, you know, in school. And, you know, he got into electric guitar and he like really got into it. I mean, he became a shredder, you know, and like a year later, no more bullying. I'm not saying that bullying is a good thing and you have to play guitar to stop the bullying, but you know, it just stopped that whole thing in his life. And now he's like 17 and he's going to go to Pepperdine, which is a big university out here. And he's studying with teachers that worked with Christopher Parkening, and he's like doing classical guitar now. And his whole life has changed. And I don't have children, but I feel like, well, since I don't have children, I'm contributing to some of these people's lives, you know, and that feels kind of good.
As a marketing hook, that's a great thing. Stop being bullied, you know.
Play guitar.
I'm telling you, man, that's a good ad. What was the upside and the downside to being so young? 17 is young as hell. Even though women are more mature than guys, it's still young. What was the upside and the downside to being so young and in a scene like that in LA playing music?
Well, the upside is you're young, you know, you have all this crazy energy. So I was just like, go, 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 go. And I, you know, I wanted everything to be perfect. I was a little bit of a, you know, I was a little bit of a general sometimes in the band, you know, calling people out on mistakes and shit like that. It was terrible. Such a bitch sometimes. And these girls were older, but I, you know, because I had studied with with Randy, I had this thing, you know, everything has to be, you know, perfect and yeah, right. And then now the downside was I was very naive. There was a lot of crazy stuff that happened, guys and stuff, you know, that I wasn't prepared for that. I wasn't interested in it and I wasn't prepared. You know, I we had all kinds of weird fans. I mean, we had weird girl fans. We had weird guy fans. And I didn't know how to deal with that.
You got no coping
that.
Skills at 17. How the hell are you supposed to?
No, you know, people are picking up on me and I'm just.
That's weird.
You know, it's kind of a guitar nerd and, you know, not.
Well, I had interviewed a long time ago a young woman who's playing guitar for, like, I believe, like a 14-year-old, and that she's the artist.
And, oh, right. And she's older than the artist. Yeah.
Right. But what was creepy, she was telling me she gets really freaked out sometimes because there's guys like my age that are fans and they line up. Oh, that's fucking, I mean, you know, yeah. If that was my kid, I'd be there like, you know.
Yeah, we had some of that.
That's really like not cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we had some of that. And, you know, lucky for me, I was the youngest, you know, so the girls were, you know, older than me. I watched them. They were somewhat protective at times, but they were more interested in being with all these guys, not the weird guys, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's guys. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, so I was naive. I had never been in, I'd been, my first concert really was going to see Randy in Quiet Riot. So cool. I was like 12 and my parents had to come with me as chaperone me. So I would, you know, go see him at a couple clubs out here. But other than that, I'd never played in a club. You know, I was barely in any bars or clubs because I was underage. So the way that it worked was, you know, I could go in the club with the band, you know, before we went on stage and get ready and then play the show. And then right away I had to go back. I had to leave, you know.
Oh, wow. Which is probably a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. It's a good thing. Yeah. So, yeah, I couldn't hang out in the club because I was underage. So I had to deal with that till I was 21.
What? Oh, that's right. The drinking age is 21. That's right.
Yeah. It was 21 back then. That's right. You know, so.
What is it? Is it still 21 or is it 18 now?
Still 21.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. You go to England. Like I went to England.
No, it's nothing there. There's no drinking.
My son was 15. We went because my wife's from there and we went and went in a bar and they went over to him and they said, hey, do you want a sample? I'm like, what the fuck? He's 15. And he looked 15. He didn't look like he was like massive. They were like, yeah. I was like, yes.
Yeah, man. I know.
Hey, talk about working with Lindsey Buckingham, because I know that was pretty influential on your career and your life, and maybe like how you got the gig and any cool stories.
Well, after Precious Metal ended, I started a little band with the singer, and we were trying to do different kind of music, and I was floating around. I really didn't know what was going to go on with my career. And it just so happened that one of the guys that worked at our former label was working for this woman who was kind of like an agent, a music agent, but not a booking music agent, a person who, like a music casting agent, you know, a band casting agent. So she was responsible for putting, you know, band members in people's bands. And so Lindsay, I guess, had contacted this woman, and my friend from the label was working there, and he was looking specifically to put together a special band, like a guitar army. And he wanted two women guitar players and two male guitar players top of him. Right.
Wow. What was he doing that for?
Because Lindsay's records, like some of the Fleetwood Mac records, they're very layered in guitar, but his solo records especially, and this one in 92, the Out of the Cradle one, was very like multi-layered guitar parts. And he wanted to recreate those sounds and also the vocal sounds. He wanted, you know, people who could play and sing.
Okay.
So my singing consisted of this rock, rock, rock. You know, that was my singing. That was my background singing. But I auditioned anyway, you know, I was like, fuck it. You know, okay. They called me and they're like, we think you're great for this, you know? And, I heard that Lita Ford auditioned. I heard all these people auditioned, Meredith Brooks. But I don't know if that's true. But anyway, I did audition, and it was the day of my birthday party. I was having this big, gigantic birthday party. I went to the audition in this warehouse at a rehearsal studio, and these guys are sitting around. The other guys were already, you know, in the band. Lindsay's sitting around. Everybody's fucking smoking pot, you know, and it's in the middle of the afternoon. You know, and they're smoking pot. Right. And they're just like, hey, what's up? Even Lindsay, you know, he's like, hi. You know, and I mean, I'm like not used to that, you know. Even though I've been around all of this stuff for many years already, I was like at an audition, you know.
How old were you that time when you auditioned?
22, 23.
So you were pretty serious about work. Like,
yes. And I was looking for something because Precious Metal was done, you know, and grunge music had come, and it was like a whole different thing now. And I didn't know what the fuck I was going to do. You know, I was like working at recording studios, answering phones and cleaning toilets and shit, you know? Yeah. So I was like, I wanted a job, you know? And so, and when I got the call too, and I was like, do I have to learn, you know, what do I have to learn? You know, like I'm all prepared, you know, what song do I have to learn? You know, they're like, nothing, just bring your guitar. And I'm like, okay, this is weird. And then you know, I walked in and the same thing, you know, hey, what's, you know,
and they're all
that's stoned. Happening. They're all stoned. And Lindsay's like, have a seat, you know, and there's no song that I had to learn. So I don't, you know, he starts to show me a part on the guitar. And then he shows me a part to singing, a background singing part, like a real part, you know, not rock. Yeah. And then the other guys start playing. And so I'm playing with them all, just a part of a song. And we're all playing different guitar parts at the same time. And Lindsay's just looking at us, looking at me, you know, and then we stop and he gives me another part and we do it again with some other song. It's not even a whole band yet. I'm not even playing with a bass player or drums, just guitar. That's only. Wild. And we're all sitting in chairs. And then he looks at me and he goes, is that how you dress?
Oh my God. Like talk about making you feel comfortable, right? Or uncomfortable.
I was like wearing leggings and like cowboy boots. I'm still in like 1989, you know? Yeah. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, I was in this metal band and, you know, but I can wear whatever, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I was just asking, you know. And then, so, but that went on 4 hours. I was there like 4 hours.
Wow. You think it's because they were so stoned? Like maybe it was like 30 minutes worth of work spread out over.
No, you know what it was? I think he wanted to see if he could hang with you. Because we were going to go on the road.
Okay, so he was just seeing who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so I was there for like literally 4 hours. And I'm like, I got to go, you know.
It's my birthday. I want to go.
Yeah, I had like 40 people coming over that night. I had this big, you know, party planned. And like, I finally had to say, hey, I'm really sorry, but I got to go. You know, I got this thing happening. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, no problem, you know. And I'm like, okay. Well, you know, nice to meet you, you know, and I got in my car and I was like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What? I didn't know whether I got that audition, you know, if I got the gig or didn't get it or how I did. I didn't know anything and I didn't hear anything for 2 weeks. And I was like, you know, fuck it. I just forgot about it. And then I got a call from that woman and she said, Lindsay loves you. You're in the band. You're doing Leno in 2 weeks.
Holy shit.
And I was like, what the fuck? You know, and that's how that went down. And that literally was the beginning of, I would say, my PhD education, you know, or master's education. Prior to that, I was just in, you know, like getting my bachelor's, you know, in precious metal. And then when I got in Lindsay's band, it became a little bit of a different level when I got in that band. Things were done, you know, way more. I mean, we were professional in precious metal, but this was way on another level. And I was working for somebody. So
your first gig was on Leno.
First gig was Leno.
Did you get rehearsals at least, or?
Well, I'll try to make this short, but yeah, you'll probably have to edit this. There was a lot of rehearsals. I mean, he's a total perfectionist.
Oh, that's good.
You know, crazy perfectionist. And we were rehearsing, you know, 5, sometimes 6 days a week, you know, 8 hours a day. And we didn't know it, but at the time he had ADATS, that was like, you know, a recording machine back then. And we were all on individual, we were being recorded without knowing that we were being recorded on individual tracks. So like my guitar and my vocal was being recorded on 2 ADAT tracks.
And yeah, yeah.
Every other musician was being recorded as well. And this was a big band. This is a 10-piece band. 5 guitar players, 2 percussion players, a drummer, bass player, and keys.
That's crazy. I cannot believe that. That's a mess. So, what a great experience, though, for you first time out. My God.
It was great. So yeah. We were all being recorded, and he was listening to our rehearsals after we left. And, you know, after, you know, I think we had, after 1 week or, I think we had like 2.5 weeks or something to get ready for Leno. After like the first week, you know, he was sitting down with everybody and he was saying, you're pitchy on this part, you know, your time is bad on this part. And, you know, he sat down with me and I almost shit in my pants, you know.
What did he say?
Well, he said those things, you know, he's like, and he's basically like, if you don't fix this, you know, I'm going to have to fire you.
Holy shit. Like, talk about pressure. Wow.
I never had that, that kind of pressure. I had pressure in precious metal, but it was our band. So it was,
you weren't working for somebody. You were
No, I mean, we had labels to deal with and managers and stuff, but I never had that before. And I'll tell you what, I think that's the reason why I'm on anxiety medication now.
From Lindsay Buckingham. It's his fault. Holy shit. Wait a minute. You're in California. Why don't you just smoke weed?
I know. Now, weed and I don't get along. So anyway, yeah, that caused a lot of, you know, anxiety for me. And
yeah,
so I literally started spending my salary that I was making on, started taking lessons.
Oh, wow.
Guitar lessons. And then I started taking vocal lessons. And I was getting together with the other people in the band, and we had to get together too. I mean, other people had to get together too. I wasn't the only one singled out. There were a couple of other ones that were singled. So we got together and we were practicing our parts, recording them and practicing, listening back. And, you know, and he just left for 1 week and he's like, you guys get the shit together, your band, and I'll come back and listen.
Well, that was pretty good because he left it up to you guys to determine your own destiny. I think that's actually good because, you know, it shows you who someone is if you fucking do it or not, you know.
You know, and we got our shit together. We really did. He put one of the other guitar players in charge and we all got our shit together. The whole band sounded super tight. We were staying extra hours, you know, and he came back and he's like, good job, guys, you know. And, you know, eventually he came up to me and he said, you know, I knew you would rise to the occasion.
That's nice.
And yet again, another, you know, mentor in my life without knowing that he was a mentor. And then he eventually became more of a mentor to me. We had an interesting, you know, relationship. And, you know, that was just one of the best lessons I've ever learned in my life, not to take things, you know, for granted. And, you know, every time you get something big in your life, you know, you can't get on this high horse because there's something that's going to bring you down, man. It's always going to happen. You cannot take these things for granted and you can't think you're the shit, you know, because there's always something, you know, that's going to be there to bring you down. So you got to be conscious. And I've stuck to that, you know. Mindset with everything I do, whether it's my own shit or if I'm hired for something, a session or this or that. I'm really always trying to stay conscious and be like, okay, don't take this for granted, you know? So that was such a huge lesson. And I owe a lot to him, you know, I really do.
So he kind of set the bar for you professionalism wise.
Yes.
That's really, yeah. He set it really high, which is awesome.
So Randy set the bar really high with guitar playing, you know, and then I had this other guy come along and set the bar really high, you know, for applying that work, applying that guitar work. And I learned so much from him, how to put a show together, you know, songwriting, arrangements, all kinds of things.
It's interesting. You remind me of, I interviewed, Phil Collin from Def Leppard last week, and I asked him a question about like most important thing he learned, and he said, Craig, the most important thing I've learned is everything in life is temporary. It's exactly what you said. He said, exactly. You know, you think you're on top of the world, you get a phone call the next week about someone in your family or your health condition, yeah, or the plug's been pulled.
Yeah.
And he said, likewise, you know, everything's falling to shit. You get a call, somebody that you worked with 5 years ago needs you on a project that's going to tour the world or something.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's a healthy attitude to keep that in mind. And it also doesn't allow you to take things too seriously, take yourself too seriously, which is,
well, there is that. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good. All right. Is it true what I read about Donald Trump in a video that Precious Metal was making? And if it's true, can you share that story?
Oh, I sure can. I don't know. I can't say, you know, what all your listeners, you know, listener bases, but
it's actually mixed 50-50.
All right. Yeah. You know, right. Listen, I respect everybody's political views, whatever it is, but this is a true story.
Oh, this isn't a political commentary. This is a story. No, yeah.
No, this is a true story. And this is how it happened. Our label at the time, the president of our label was, his family were friends with Donald Trump. And we recorded a remake. We did a remake of an old Motown song called Mr. Big Stuff.
Oh, great. Great tune.
And we did kind of like,
yes. A couple of people didn't. No, never mind. I'll shut up. Go ahead. Sorry. Mr. Big.
Oh, it's okay.
Great tune. I'm thinking of Mr. Big.
No, that's a different band. Yeah. No, we did this old Motown song and we rocked it up, you know, and it was pretty cool. It sounded cool. And the label was like, we're going to make that the single. And we have this great idea. You know, we've talked to Donald Trump and, you know, he's willing to play, quote unquote, Mr. Big Stuff in the video. And we're going to fly you and the singer out to be in this video. And he's going to play Mr. Big Stuff, you know, and kind of like we're going to, you know, do like a parody, you know, of him. And he's agreed to do it for X amount of dollars. And he was going to basically donate that money to a charity.
Yeah.
Says he.
Charity of Donald Trump.
says he. So we're like, okay, great. Wow. You know, and he was kind of big at that time in 1989.
Oh yeah.
He was like kind of a, you know, a pop icon, right? A tabloid icon. So we fly out there and we shoot the video. And I mean, I've got pictures. I got a lot of pictures to show you.
You do.
And you know,
so you went out to New York.
We went out to New York and we went to Trump. Went to the Hyatt Regency and they got us a suite and we filmed in the suite. We had a desk, you know, like
the one over Grand Central, the one right above.
The big one. And we filmed there and then we filmed parts on the streets and we took some photos with him. And, you know, was he like somewhat inappropriate in the photos? I mean, it depends on it. You know, nowadays it's like, it's so pinpointed, you know, as far as what men do with women. I mean, I was like 21 or 22. No, 22. Yeah. And you know, we posed for a photo and he put his arm, you know, around me. He did kind of like the under the boob thing, you know, like right under it. Okay. He wasn't touching it, but he's right under it.
Yeah, that's not fucking cool. When he's your dad's age, that's just
it was kind of weird.
Just not cool.
And then he turned to me and he said, oh, he kind of squeezed the side of my stomach or whatever. And he's like, oh, you got a hard body, no cellulite there.
Oh my God. That is so gross. I'm not that you're, so, you know, it's like, that's gross to tell a young girl that.
So he said that to me, and the singer heard it too. She was there. Everybody saw it. They all saw it. Everybody taking photos. And I just was like, whatever, another creepy fucking guy, you know? But the worst of it was the fact that after we had shot it, edited it, and it was all promoed and ready to go on Headbangers Ball, this was going to be our big breakout this band. You know, we had Capitol Records behind us. We had this video in the hole ready to go. And he calls the label and says, you know, I don't want you to release this unless you give me $30,000 more.
He had already been paid.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know,
but I'm sure he signed something, a contract.
I don't know if he signed something. He might have. But there was some business deal also going on between him and the people that owned the label. There were this was an offshoot of Capitol, Chameleon, you know, and it was owned by this family, the Pritzkers. They were rather.
Oh, they're huge real estate people in New York City. Yeah. The Pritzkers. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So they had something going on also. And we were caught in the middle and we were told this story and the label was like, we can't pay that more, you know, money for you. I mean, you know, we're not Aerosmith, you know, we're just this band trying to make it, you know, after 6 years of being together and we have this great video. And so
if you agree to something, like, you don't negotiate afterwards, you negotiate before.
He's famous for negotiating.
Right. Right. I've heard this tons of times.
He's famous for doing that. So we had to can the video and reshoot it with a double and not using any face. And it just didn't have the same, didn't have the same panache, you know?
Yeah. What a disappointment for young kids, basically getting an opportunity.
He absolutely ruined our chance at really breaking out the band. That was our one moment, because basically after that, 1990 came along, Nirvana, you know, then labels were like, we're not playing glam rock anymore. And we got dropped.
Wow. That's really awful.
So I didn't vote for him. But you know, when he was running, all these newspapers came out of the woodwork, and Huffington Post and Billboard and Rolling Stones wanting to talk to us about that. And I'm like, this is like 35 years ago. You know, you want to talk to us about this
You're
now?
Kidding me. That's really weird.
I mean, that's the press. You know, they're just pulling stuff out.
Yeah, so. That's not really relevant. But I mean, not to today, but it sucks. That's a really shitty thing. Sorry about that.
Well, no, it's okay. They wanted to hear the story, you know, of how he screwed us, because you know, that he was running in 2016. So all the press was digging up whatever they could and they found this story and they wanted to hear what exactly happened. So it's okay. We told them the story just like I told you.
Yeah. Yeah. That sucks that happened though. It sucks that that happened with him.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
you were recognized, you know, by guitar players, one of the top 50 acoustic players, but you're also like a shredder on electric.
Well, so the list in Guitar Player magazine came out on the top 50 acoustic guitar players. And then on the side is a separate list within that list, okay? But it's numbered, but not by rank.
Okay.
So it's within that list, and they called it a bonus list of rock acoustic guitar players.
Okay.
So I had to clarify that because it's not the actual top 50, but it is in that list.
Yeah,
it's just
another
list. And they wanted to separate the regular acoustic guitar players from like the ones who have their own unique rock style.
So the Pepino separated from the people who play rock and really good acoustic.
Right.
But
so I was actually in that list with Lindsay.
that's funny.
But hey, I was in that list with Lindsay, Jimmy Page, you know, that kind of guitar playing.
It's pretty badass.
I mean, I was honored. I was like, wow.
But what do you like doing better, electric or acoustic? Because now you got this, the you know, your string project.
The String Revolution. I have toggled back and forth, honestly. And I really learned that a lot because in Lindsay's band, we had a toggle back and forth. We were using acoustic and electric. And so when people ask me that, what do you like better? You know, I can't answer that question. That's again, like, you know, which kid do you love more? You know, I mean, they're both two separate applications. They're both versatile in different ways. The acoustic guitar is more portable in that it doesn't need, you know, to be plugged in. So I just pick it up. It's also very percussive. So there are some things that I like, naturally percussive, you know, some things that I like that I can do on the acoustic. And I am using it a lot more because I have that other project. But I just played, you know, the Randy Rhoads Remembered show a couple weeks ago. And, you know, that's just shredding the entire time. And I love that, too. I mean, that will never go away. And in my solo project, I do both. I switch from electric to acoustic back and forth. So I think it's really important to be versatile in both.
When you're playing a solo project, is it just you alone?
So the solo project out here and in places that are close to LA, I'll bring my band. Okay. I have great players out here that I've been with for a long time. But on the road, it's mostly just me solo, and it is solo acoustic, but I also bring my electric because I do some loops and I'll bring out the electric and play over the loops. And certain shows, especially in Europe, I do have bands in other countries, like band members. Yeah. And if it's a band show or a festival where they want a full band, I'll hire the band and we'll do a full band show. But I had to really figure out a way of being, have different applications of doing my solo show, whether it's solo acoustic or with a band or whatnot, because, I had to say yes to any gig I could get and I had to make it work. So, yeah, I mean, it's both.
When you're doing solo stuff or with your band, are you typically like out afterwards greeting people and selling merch and stuff like that?
Yeah, right away.
Yeah, your energy is so high. I got to believe that goes over incredibly well.
Right away. I have other people packing my shit up and I go right to the merch table and talk to people and sell and do whatever I can. Yeah. We were discussing that earlier about promotion. And yeah, I mean, I learned about networking and promoting and at 17. I mean, we were doing that with Precious Metal. We're walking up and down Sunset Strip, giving flyers out. That's what you used to do out here.
Sure.
You know, go in Laurel Canyon and staple our poster for, you know, our show at the Roxy or the Whiskey or whatever. And we were doing that back then. I learned it very young, you know, promoting, self-promoting.
But energy is the key to success in that, you know, having the high energy, you know, I was talking to my wife this weekend and, she's a realtor and she's doing some different sales stuff. And I was telling her, look, you just got to keep your energy high because he who has the most energy wins. And because most people are sitting around in a coma. So that's if you're true. Like enthusiastic and excited about what you have to do, you could be talking about fucking, you know, baby powder or socks and they'll be like, yeah, this is great. You know, I said, but you got to keep that energy high.
Well, yeah. And I made sure that, you know, that energy is in my show.
Yeah,
you know, for the most part, because if I'm trying to sell my music, you know, they're there watching it. Well, there it is. So they're either going to like it or not. And you know, the energy, it's a little different in a studio recording, but it's still there, you know, and it's still me. It's my work. And so I just give, you know, every show, you know, 200%. And that's if there's, you know, 500 people in the audience or, you know, 50 people.
Sure.
I mean.
Well, if you're not excited about it, they're not going to be, for sure.
No.
So, I mean, that's how you got to make it work.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, so what do you do to, like, do you like work out or anything? Or are you just like...
Tons of blow and hair, you know, tons of speed, methamphetamine, and no.
Best answer ever to that question. No, because your energy is high. How do you, I mean, just naturally?
I do work out, but not on a like everyday basis. Yeah. I just, you know, I'm literally like in a passionate love affair, you know, with music and performing. People do ask me, you know, what's your favorite? Do you like being in the studio or do you like being on the road? And yeah, I can answer that. I do enjoy being in the studio on the creative part, but I have to say that I am absolutely 100% a performer. So I love going on the road. I'm an entertainer. You know, I think when people come to see me solo, you know, I'm an okay singer, but they're coming to see my guitar playing, my songwriting. I think my songwriting is pretty good, but I'm funny on stage. I tell stories. I'm genuine. I want to connect with people out there who are paying, you know, $20 to come see me, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know what it's like to be on the other side, and I get bored really fast if somebody isn't like entertaining me, and that could be anything.
Sure.
It could be comedy, you know, theater, whatever, a movie. So I'm really aware of that. And I learned about all of that with Lindsay.
Well, fuck, it's 46 minutes into this. Now I'm like, I got to like sit up and step up my game here. I don't want you to fade off on me.
I won't fade. You got me, man.
All right. Well, good.
I got to tell you this story because I energy, for instance. I learned how to survive, and I think to survive in this business, you got to just push through, man. You like this morning, Craig, I'd get up 7:30 in the morning to do this interview. This is a perfect example, but the little story I was going to tell you, and I know we don't got tons of time, but you know, another lesson learned in Lindsay's band, we were rehearsing and I ate something bad that fucking day, and I had like food poisoning, and
oh, man.
I'm telling you, man, it was coming out of all every orifice. And I went to him and I was like, man, I gotta go home, you know, I can't do this, you know, and I rarely do that. I like push through shit, you know. And he's like, you're not going anywhere. And I'm like, okay, but I may have to go to the bathroom, you know, or something during the song. And he's like, we'll get you a chair. You can sit down. And if you have to go, you know, just get up, put your guitar down, go do whatever you have to do and come back. You're not leaving rehearsal.
Wow. So don't you think that was like a little bit over the top? No.
I think it's boot camp.
Yeah. But you know, I think if it's day one, I get it. You know, first week, I get it. It's like, you know, calling in sick your first day, week of work. Not fucking cool. But like, I'm assuming you'd already been like vetted.
Yes. But yeah. we were, we'd already done Leno and all that stuff. We were rehearsing for our tour, you know, and yeah, no, listen, Lindsay is hardcore and you know, I know that there are problems going on, you know, with Mac right now, Lindsay, and I've talked to Mick, you know, I ran into him at the airport last year, and you know, Lindsay is an intense guy. He's very intense and he takes everything very serious. And yeah, sometimes it's too serious, but I kind of get it. You know, if you want to make things really good, I mean, this is why Fleetwood Mac is so good and sold so many records. Yeah. I mean, he expects the best out of everybody. And he expects you to be there no matter what, give your best no matter what. I mean, he had a terrible cold on the road and there was a doctor called into the dressing room, like a, you know, called to the venue and they shot him up with steroids.
Yeah,
and
big difference between being on the road though.
True.
Big difference.
But,
you know,
but, you know, he wanted us all to be there, you know, doing the rehearsal. We all had specific parts, you know. Mm. And it's a little hardcore, but I get it. I think, you know, I portray some of that now, you know, in the String Revolution. You know, I get mad when one of the guys is like, you know, I have a cold. I can't come to rehearsal. And I'm sort of like, get your fucking ass to rehearsal now.
Yeah, but that's different. I have a cold. You were like, you know, had food poisoning or whatever. There's a big gap between that.
Well, I don't know.
You know, if you got the fucking sniffles, bring a box of tissues, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're like.
These guys haven't been through what I've been through. So, you know, I have been abused and I'm passing on the abuse.
You're paying it forward. anyway, so. Talk about, no, it's all good. You just be you. It's perfect. Talk about the new String Revolution record, Red Drops, 5-song EP. I really like the title track, Red Drops, and that's the opener, and also the last song, Buzz. And I was just curious, is there any backstory to either of those songs?
Well, you know, it's as we say in our shows, we have a hard time with instrumental songs because, you know, there's no lyrics. So you really have to go with what is the feeling, you know, and Red Drops is such a delicate sounding song. It just felt like floating drops, you know. I don't know. This is like very Californian, right?
I was going to say, but did you think of that in your yoga class?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's kind of like that. And, you know, and we felt we were seeing colors and, you know.
Okay.
So that's how that happened.
It's a beautiful, it's a really beautiful song. In all honesty, really, really pretty.
And then Buzz was, I started the lick on baritone, in that song, da na 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 na. So, people, if you buy that record, you'll hear da na 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 na.
Did you play baritone throughout the whole record, or did you?
I play baritone on almost every song that has baritone on the record. Not every song has it, but that we also switch off. I have to look at the song list again. So the way the band works is we're all four play guitar, and then we do switch off with baritone. And you know, drum sounds and things like that are all being played on the guitar. Yeah. So if you hear a drum percussive sound, it's on the guitar. If you hear a bass, it's not a bass, it's a baritone, you know? So that's the concept behind the string revolution, was to create kind of a band sound with four acoustic guitars. Although we're going to branch out soon and start using electric as well. And Buzz was just, you know, it sounded kind of like the baritone. Sometimes when you hit it really hard, it buzzes, you know, and I was playing that lick over and over, and that just came, you know, so it's really hard, you know, in instrumental know, titles. But yeah, I'm really proud of that band. We've come a long way in 4 years. I met the guys. I put an ad out in Craigslist.
You're big on ads. You've had like a lot of success with ads. With like,
it's so funny.
Yeah.
This is a thing, you know, it's how you write the ad. And I know tons of great guitar players out here, but I really wanted to meet new unknown people. And I think I got that idea from Lindsay too, because not only were we doing a guitar army in his band, but he also purposely hired unknown people.
Why did he do that? Same reason he wanted just new blood or
new blood.
Yeah.
Yep. New blood. And
that's actually pretty courageous for, especially for a guy like him who had access to probably, you know, the entire population of guitar players.
Yeah, he had access to so many seasoned players, but he literally taught us parts. I mean, he taught us the parts. He's a great teacher.
Yeah.
I didn't want to teach anybody anything. I just wanted to find new players, and I was open to guys or girls, but not one girl answered my ad. And I found these guys, and two of them are from Europe, and I've done extensive touring in Europe, so I have a really cool connection with Europeans. I love working with them. They work super hard. Not that Americans don't, but
doesn't it suck that you have to like couch everything that you fucking say? It's like awful. Cause I'm like, man, you didn't really need to say that. But if I was you, I probably would have said the same thing. Cause like, you know, I like Europeans' work ethic. And then like you see tomorrow all over the internet, you know, Janet Robin hates Americans' work ethic. Like what the fuck? Like, I'm so like really irritated by that.
The PC thing has gone a little too far.
Well, it's intent. It's you just said someone has a good work ethic. You didn't say someone has a bad work ethic.
No, it's true. I mean,
it's fucking ridiculous.
I guess what it means is it's a different work ethic than Americans.
It doesn't matter what it means. There's nothing malicious about it. You're not saying, all Americans suck.
You're right.
But yeah, people from Europe do have a bit of a stronger work ethic. They come to this country and they probably grew up in shitty circumstances in like, I don't know where they're from, but wherever they're from, it's probably not as good as it is here, and shit is not as available. So they tend to be a little hungrier, tend to work a little harder because the opportunities weren't there. You know, if you grow up in, you know, LA,
it's different,
you know, or wherever, you're used to being able to, you know, do whatever you want. Anyway,
I'm just going on a rant.
I hate that people have to do that. It really sucks.
You're absolutely right. I agree. So I'm not going to qualify.
Hold on. We're going to take a deep breath. Fuck.
a yoga break. We're taking a yoga break.
Fuck.
No, they're great guys. They're great players, great musicians. One of them is also from the LA area. And, you know, yeah, like the whole multicultural thing. One's a Latino, one's Austrian, the other one's Switzerland, and they come from small towns.
That's really cool.
You know, it's different opportunities.
Totally different. My wife's from a little town in England. She's like, she has less people in her town than were in my building, I think, in the Bronx where I grew up.
Yeah.
I get it. I totally get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So great guys. And we've worked hard. And, you know, I'm taking this year off of my solo work, to work on, the String Revolution, right? Just focus on it this year and see where we can take it to get a little bit more in the veins of the music industry. We just got a great agency, which is cool. And so we're starting to book more gigs a little outside of the LA area. We're doing a little like Northern California tour coming up.
And, that's great.
Yeah. And you know, we're looking at guitar festivals and these things.
Is this your first kind of like
side project?
Yeah. Side project that you're sort of helming. Yeah. That's really cool. How does that feel?
Well, it feels good in a lot of ways because I have people helping with other things.
Yeah.
You know? With my solo project, I mean, I have to do everything.
Yeah.
It's like a full-time job. You know, I mean, everything still is a full-time job. I work like, you know, I'm working 17 hours a day, whatever it is I'm doing. It has to do with music. But yeah, it's nice to have, you know, people do different things and to see which person is, you know, excels in one area. And we try to divvy up those, you know, jobs with each of us. Like one of the guys is really good with Spotify and knows that whole thing. And,
and
you know, we're up to 400,000 streams.
That's awesome.
You know, on Spotify, which, I mean, I don't even know what that means. No, I'm kidding.
But, doesn't matter.
Yeah, no,
it's a big number. Like, it sounds good.
I have not. Yeah, it is. I have not done that kind of work on my solo records. So I'm like, man, do it.
Absolutely.
You know, let's keep going. And so it's been really nice. And, my goal really is to keep both projects going. But listen, if the String Revolution goes a little bit further in a direction that, you know, can catapult our careers more, then I stick with that for a little while. You know, I mean, I'm just kind of like juggling both, you know?
Good. I'm really happy. Yeah. And just want to tell everybody, please listen to the String Revolution. The new record is called Red Drops. Some really pretty, really pretty guitar playing on there and just like really tight band, real professional. So
thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So.
Well, my CDs, I mean, if you want to ask me about my CDs, I do have a lot I released.
Let's talk about them.
So, well, the last one, you know, you talked about 2012 or something that I did with John Carter Cash. And then, you know, I did another one with him in 2016 called Take Me As I Am. And I'm actually really proud of the guitar work on that. So if somebody's at all interested in my work, if you listen to Take Me As I Am, you're going to get a lot of the electric kind of guitar work that I do, not only solos, but arrangements and stuff. And then if you listen to Red Drops, you're going to get a lot of the acoustic side of me. So
take me all of your is to buy your records. They're all available on your website.
Yeah. You can go on my website or iTunes or, you know, they're all over. Of course, going to my website is cool because I'll send it directly to you and I'll sign it and whatever. But yeah, I mean, people aren't buying CDs anymore, are they, Craig?
No, they're not. No, you know what? I just joined Apple Music like probably 6 months ago because I kept asking people to send me their music. And I'm like, this is really obnoxious. Like, you know, I felt like, and then everybody's got to upload and everybody's cool about it. Like nobody said, and I was like, man. And then I had all my kids. Oh, yeah. God, if I had more than I got to breathe for a minute on that. My kids, they all had Apple Music and they're all paying. And I said, you know, guys, let me just pay for it because then you could all join it for free. And I got to be honest with you, I could see the benefit of it. It's like you can literally listen to a different record one after the other for the rest of your life. I mean, it's just like, it's just not fair. They don't pay you guys, you know?
Well, Spotify pays, you know, a little. But no, I mean, you know, if you want to make a living as a you know, touring musician, you got to go on the road.
Yeah,
you have to sell tickets on the road to your gigs, and you can sell other kinds of merch. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't still be writing and making music and putting it out there. People still want to hear new stuff, and you know, and it's single driven. So you release singles now.
Yeah, yeah. And right. Like you guys did an EP, you don't have to do a 12 song or 9 song record. Most of the people I'm interviewing are doing 5 and 6 song EPs, you know, for that reason, because it costs money and it takes time. And you know what? You can go on the road and tour the EP just as well as you could tour the record, and it cuts your time in half and your expenses.
It's true.
So I get it.
We might just, we're talking about recording a single now.
Great.
And just releasing it, you know. We all have studios at home, and we know some great engineers and stuff. So we're thinking about that. I can't say I love it, because you know, I come from the 70s, late 70s, yeah. 80s. You know, when you know,
story.
The record told the story from beginning to end. But you got it. You got to go. You got to go with what's happening, and you know, just keep moving forward.
Let me ask you this. What were some of the lower points or darker periods that you've had to deal with throughout the course of your career or life, and how'd you get through them? And it could be whatever you want, music, business, personal, whatever you want to talk about.
Well, definitely when Precious Metal broke up, I mean, that was my life from age 17 to 21. So I didn't know. I dropped out of college. I mean, I was going to UCLA. I changed my entire life plan, you know, to make that band happen. And then I was like, oh my God, you know, I'm 21. What am I going to do?
Isn't it funny thinking about now at this age, like just thinking about, I was 21. What am I going to do? And you think like, shit, man, you know, just
what
relax, relax, go have a Coke, you know?
Yeah. You know, so you had picked yourself up and, you know, started another project with the singer. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to be open to being a hired gun. Maybe I wasn't singing on my own. I wasn't writing on my own yet. I hadn't, you know, so I just relied on support from friends and family, and other musicians actually. And there was another time where I was in a relationship for 12 years with somebody, and, you know, it fell apart after 12 years, and I was still doing my solo stuff. Yeah. And, you know, I had to move out and get my own place, and I hadn't really lived on my own in years. And it was a whole, I was in my 30s, you know, when that happened, 35. And it's that unpredictable time where you're like, am I ever going to buy a house? Should I have kids? I didn't know what was going to go on. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, my life is falling apart. And, you know, again, I mean, I tell everybody, if you play an instrument, you're never going to be lonely, you know? So I turned to my guitar, and I think I wrote some great songs during that time. But, you know, I want to clarify that you don't have to be down and depressed to write great songs. You can also write songs when you're happy,
of course,
too. But, you know, it was a good cathartic time for me to write songs. And I had surrounded myself by a really great songwriting community at the time that was happening out here in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And so I had good inspiration and musical support for that singer-songwriter scene that was kind of going on out here. And I, you know, got my place, and I just picked up the pieces and moved forward. And then there's been different times, you know, different things that happen, careers, things that, you know, this gig fell through, or something happened with a gig I was hired for. And, you know, there was a lot of miscommunication on that, and, you know, it didn't work out, and, you know, little things, but then something good will happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, it is always up and down. And I do take things serious because this is my career. But on the other hand, it's like, you can't, like you were saying, you know, you can't completely take everything serious, you know, otherwise drive you nuts. But I think that I am genuinely always wanting to do a good job. And if there's any question about me doing not a good job, or will I do a good job, I you know, it freaks me out, you know, and I panic, you know, I go back to the Lindsey Buckingham days, you know.
Well, the thing is, when you're like that in everything you do. That's not like, you know, like pregnant or, you know, it's like being pregnant or not. You're either like that and you're like that with everything you do, including relationships, including work, or you're not. And when you have that intensity and willingness to go the extra yard, you know, the extra mile, when shit happens, it's tougher because you're more vested in it, you know, especially like, you know, I know plenty of people that have had, you know, that's a long time relationship, 12 years and all the, you know, stuff like that is, you know, you don't like just have a drink and get over it. It's a process.
That was tough.
You know?
I think that had to happen for me because I really grew up, became more of an adult, more of a functioning adult and learning how to take care of myself more and figuring out like, hey, you know, if I do some lessons or sessions and stuff on the side, I can make more of a living. And at least I have my guitar in my hands. And my dad actually taught me that. He's like, you should branch out and not only do the touring and this and that, because then you're sitting around waiting for these things to happen, or you're booking the stuff yourself. And that takes a long time. And he's like, branch out and try other things. So, and I was against it. But he is right, you know, and some of these things that I'm doing now, that, you know, along with the touring and the string revolution, all this teaching, doing sessions, they lead to other things.
Yeah, totally.
Bigger and better things. So it's never a bad thing when you're doing your, you know, whatever your thing is, try to stay in that same realm, you know, and because you don't know what it's going to lead you to, you know.
No.
And you know, I'm married now, and you know, I'm 52. You know, when I turned 50, I wrote that record, Take Me As I Am, and basically it was like I don't give a fuck anymore about anything. You know, I turned 50. I'm like, I don't care so much anymore.
Oh, I know. That's just what happened. It's so liberating, man. It's like you didn't realize.
Yeah, there is a thing about getting older and just like, it's not that I don't care. It's just, I really am trying to not take things so personally.
You're comfortable with yourself. It's like, you know what? I've worked hard and I'm okay with myself. And if somebody isn't, this is not my problem. This is their problem.
I mean, I probably would still take it somewhat personal, but not near as what it used to be like, you know, and there is something about, you know, being wise and older.
Good for you. And congratulations on getting married.
Thank you.
Let's talk about gear for a little bit. What is your, and you could talk about acoustic and electric in your case, or, you know, a little bit of each. What's your go-to guitar, and what other guitars would round out your, let's say, top three or four?
Well, my two go-to guitars are my Taylor DC-SM, which is a Dan Curry signature model. Taylor doesn't make it anymore. It's really great. I have three of them.
Wow. You really like that guitar, huh?
Yeah. And whenever I see one on up for sale, I buy it.
Okay. Wow.
They only made like 10,000 of them. I'm endorsed by Taylor, and I have other guitars of theirs. I have the great baritone, and you know, I've got other Taylors, but there's something special about that guitar. It's got a thin neck. It's for fast flat pickers, which is kind of my style on guitar. It's very percussive. And I took kind of that shredder double picking style to my, you know, acoustic. So that guitar is perfect for me.
Do you deal with
three
Tim?
Of those. Tim, yeah, Tim, I've known for years.
Yeah, he's
and
great.
Tim and I have an interesting background, too, because he was in Air Supply.
Wait a minute, Tim Godwin?
Yeah, he was a session touring guy, and he was in Air Supply before I was in Air Supply. I love the guys in Air Supply, but they have a revolving door, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're always working. And he was in Air Supply.
I didn't know that. I went out to Taylor a few weeks ago to film an episode, and then so I had known Tim through some other people that everybody loves him, and so I said, "Hey, man, everybody in the industry knows you. You've got to come on the show." I think he's coming on like in a week or two. So
tell him hi for me.
I certainly will. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy. I mean, really sweet guy.
They've been so great to me, and his cousin is my drummer in my band.
Wow. This is like,
Godwin.
This is such a small world out here.
Like I said, you stick around long enough, you start knowing everybody. But yeah, so I'd say my Taylors, and then my Tele, my 52 reissue Tele. Those are my two go-to guitars because I do switch off between the two. Now I have a 1978 Les Paul Custom that I got when I was taking lessons from Randy.
I was going to say, you're a shredder and you're playing on a 52 reissue Tele. That's unusual. Although I'm seeing more and more rockers playing Teles, like, you know, John Five. And
you just go on YouTube. You can see me shredding on that Tele.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with a Tele shredding. I mean, have you seen Prince? He's got the same guitar.
Yes. I mean, there's plenty of guys in it. It's just,
I
wasn't expecting you to say a Tele. I was expecting you to, because of the Randy thing. I was expecting you to say my Dean.
Yeah. I have two Jacksons.
You know? My Jackson, right.
I have two Jackson, custom Jacksons that I got in the 80s. And I only break those out for the Randy Rhoads Remembered show.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was figuring you were going to say.
Yeah. So there's tons of videos online of me playing that particular guitar. But I have no use for that now with the music I'm doing. So I don't go to, you know, those aren't my go-to. So those are my two go-to. And then the 78 Les Paul really never goes on the road anymore because it has huge, you know, sentimental value and it's worth a lot. So I have a Les Paul Standard. So I toggle between the Fender and the Les Paul and my Taylor. That's it.
What are you playing through amp-wise primarily?
My Blues Deluxe.
Okay. What, is it an old one?
It's it's a reissue as well, but I got in the 90s. It's cool. A Fender. Yeah, no more Marshalls. I went through all that. My pedal board is it's small. It's been cut down.
Yeah.
You know, I do have a large and then I have a medium, but the small one I've been using a lot. I take it on the road. It's got everything I need. I don't want a lot of shit. I don't want a lot of problems. You know, I don't want too many cables.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't have that many effects in my music. Even with the string revolution, it's like I'm a little bit of a what do you call it? You know, a purist.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, you got to try to make the guitar sound, you know, with your own tongue.
Yeah, with your fingers. I'm totally down on that. I like that too. I'm just maybe a wah-wah pedal and maybe a little overdrive or something.
Exactly. Yeah. A few effects.
Ever sell a guitar you wish you could get back?
I have never sold a guitar.
You're
I have
kidding
sold
amps. Me. You have every guitar you ever bought.
Well, sad story. My first guitar, electric guitar, 77 white Strat, somebody stole out of my mom's station wagon.
Oh, that sucks.
So that was during lessons with Randy. But the good thing from that was that the car insurance helped pay for my Fender, for my Gibson Les Paul Custom.
Okay, good.
In 1978. Good. So but somebody has my 77 Strat out there.
If you have that and you're listening to this, be a good person and please return it to Janet.
Oh, my cream colored. Yeah. I still have the amp. I have the amp that came with that Bronco, Fender Bronco in 1977. I only sold a couple amps. I have never sold a guitar. I have a problem with selling guitars. It's like, like prostituting your children or something. I can't do it.
Okay.
Cannot do
it. So how many guitars do you have? You must have a shit.
27.
Oh, that's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Not unheard of, but it's a lot.
No. Oh, 27.
Yeah. Are you a hoarder in general? Like, do you hang on to shit? No. Just guitars.
I have some things I hang on to. If I'm hanging on to certain stuff, it usually has to do with my career. Maybe like press.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, magazines or something like that. But sure. No.
But not like.
No. I mean, my place is. No.
Yeah. Like, No, you don't have a lot of stuff. Like.
No. Yeah. So just guitars. Yeah.
Do you remember the first record you bought ever?
The records I used to listen to, the Knack, the Cars, you know, all the Zeppelin records, Beatles. I think Beatles was the first record probably I ever bought. I'm a huge Beatles fan too. I have a strange taste in music. You know, like I'd listen to Black Sabbath and then I'd put on Sgt. Pepper's. I mean,
no, but that's not that weird for people in like our age group, really. That's pretty common, you know.
And I love Bowie too. I mean, I just really, it's so spread out, you know.
Desert Island Discs, top three. No particular order, just for today. Could change tomorrow.
So if I was on a desert island, I mean, for sure, Sgt. Pepper's. It's one of my favorite albums ever. one of the Zeppelin records. I don't know. Maybe Zeppelin 4 or something. Mm-hmm. Probably a Fleetwood Mac record of some sort. You know, I love the tunes, love the playing, the production. I wouldn't say they're like my favorite band, you know, but I'm on Lindsay's team no matter what.
That's cool.
But by the way, he had a open heart surgery. I'm not sure if you knew that.
No, I did not. How's he doing?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, it was like emergency. He had a quintuple bypass.
Holy shit! How old is he?
69.
That's young for that. I mean, I guess it happens that
Well, he has heart problems in his family.
Yeah, that's when you have that. It's tough. Wow.
He's had a hard year. You know.
Yeah, just a little.
He's doing okay. He's doing all right. Yeah, I hear through the grapevine. Occasionally, I talk to him.
So. Do you message him on Facebook?
No, he's on Instagram.
Do you message him on Instagram?
I haven't private messaged him. I've just sent like good healing.
Oh, that's nice.
No, I call. So I have his phone number. Sometimes I call. You know,
you text him, Lindsay. I was just thinking about the abuse that you put me through.
I actually told him that one time. Well, I didn't say it that way. I went up to him after a show. I went to see a solo show of his. We were backstage and I said, you know, I got to tell you, you know, you really encouraged me to do my own solo stuff. And, you know, and I don't think I would have done it without you pushing me. And I mean, he was really pushing me. He's like, send me your tape. I'll give you critique, you know, or this and that.
Supportive.
When he gives critique,
Yeah, but listen, that's what you want. You don't want to put something out in the world. He knows how it's going to be received.
Yeah. And I didn't know what the fuck I was doing when I started my own shit. And I just said, I just want to thank you for that. And he looked right into my eyes and he said, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
That's cool. So it was all good on his side.
Yes.
Most important things you've learned about yourself through your career experience and life in general.
Oh, I think what we talked about earlier, definitely.
It's temporary. Yeah.
Everything's temporary. I mean, you can't take everything too personal. I have definitely learned if you don't work hard and put in the work, you're not going to get anything back.
Ain't that
you're
the
just
truth.
You're just not, you know, so you have to do that. You have to work hard and you cannot take anything for granted. And yeah, you know, when you're young, things are a little bit different. When you get older, I think there's really important things that start happening. Like my parents are getting older. My dad has Alzheimer's, you know, different things come in. You tend to have more responsibilities and you're juggling more, you know, maybe you're married and you have that. That's also not a responsibility, but it's another part of your life.
No, it's a responsibility.
Yeah, you have to tend to if you want that in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think actually it's been a great ride. You know, if there's anything, I'm not sure I would have told my younger self, you know, to have changed things. I mean, maybe I would have started my solo career a little bit earlier and not spent as much time in precious metal, perhaps. You know, the acting thing, I don't know if that would have ever gone anywhere. I tried it for a few years, but, you know, it just wasn't me. I'm like a musician, you know? So I have gone through that in my head. Oh, what if I did that? Or what if I did this? But I don't think I would be the person I am now. And I really enjoy sharing my stories to people like you. And I love telling some things to students and trying to help people. And I don't have children. So if there's any lasting mark I can leave on somebody's life, I'd be very proud of that. You know, just leaving some kind of, you know, having some kind of influence on somebody's life, young or old, as it has to do with playing guitar or music, you know. And I'm happy about that. That makes me the most happy.
Well, that comes through for whatever that's worth. I mean, you're super even, positive.
Even performing live and giving somebody entertainment and just getting an email like, oh my God, that was so fun last night. I was having a shitty night and you made me laugh and you play with passion. And I mean, that, I love that.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really nice.
Of course, we have to make money. But yes, like you were talking earlier, we have to make money. But that is, you know, what art does for people. It makes you feel something. And if you can be that person that provides that, whether you're performing it, recording it, or teaching it, I'm happy with that.
Hey, two more questions, Janet. Toughest decision you've had to make or most difficult thing you've had to do?
Toughest decision?
Or most difficult thing you've had to do?
Well, it was very difficult being in Lindsay's band in the beginning. I mean, that was a whole new experience. So that was very, I would say it was difficult. You know, I didn't know how to operate on that level. So I had to learn really, really fast or I was going to lose that gig. And so I reached out and did what I could to make things happen. That was a difficult time as far as, you know, making it work. Toughest decision. I mean, it was tough, you know, just dropping out of college and saying, I'm not going to do that, you know, and I had to tell my parents, and you know, I come from just like, you know, middle-class Jewish family from the Valley, you know, where everybody goes to college.
Right. Yes. Right. Yeah. That's a tough thing to do.
Everybody goes to college. My brother's a dentist. His son is becoming a dentist.
Oh my God.
Dad was a dentist. It's like, I'm like, can we have like a doctor in the family or something?
That's but, so funny. So
I'm the only person in my family who did not graduate from college. So I would say that was a tough decision. There were two decisions. One was that, and the second one was finally deciding I'm not going to have children. I'm not going to have kids. I had to make a conscious decision for that because unlike you men, we're on a time limit. We're on a time limit. Meanwhile, my brother at 58 is having a baby. So I'm going to be.
Get out. Oh my God. Holy smokes. Wow. I would be suicidal if I was having a kid at this age. Let me tell you.
You know what? I'm staying out of it. It's his choice.
I wish him nothing but luck. Oh my God. I would be in tears if I found that. I mean, I shut the factory down. Like I would have done it minutes after my daughter was born, but you know, we had a little bit. You know, oh my God.
It's his first kid. My brother, my other brother has three kids. So this is my older brother's first kid. And
Well, it's not like it's unheard of nowadays. I just met someone last week who's like close to that age and just getting ready to have a kid. So, I mean, it happens. You know, it's just a different world. I wish him a lot of luck. Wow. And that is a difficult decision to decide not to have kids. It really is a difficult
for a woman. Yeah, that would have changed my life.
Yeah. But I think for a woman to actively decide that, I give you a lot of credit for not for actively making that decision instead of, you know, I mean, there's a power in that, you know, a sense of, you know, you decided that and you know, and there's nothing wrong with it.
No. I mean,
God knows.
I mean, there was this whole thing like, oh, I could freeze my eggs, blah, blah, blah. But it was very expensive. And what is that? I wasn't sure I wanted to do that. I would say professionally, another difficult decision I made was to leave this gig I had with Air Supply. And I know Air Supply has, you know, been around a long time, this and that, but it was a gig.
That's a great gig.
It's a paying gig.
That's a great,
great gig. Guys. They are nothing but supportive and they really did not want me to leave. And I have never, ever quit a paying gig. And I had to leave because I had John Carter Cash ready to produce my record. And I was still in the midst of my solo stuff. And they were so cool with me coming and going, even in the band, like, oh, we'll just get a sub or we'll just use tracks or whatever if you have to go on the road. I had a great setup with them, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it anymore. It was really, they worked so much that it was really impeding what I wanted to do as my solo work. So I remember telling my mom, and it was during the crash, you know, that we had 2008 or whatever.
Oh, 2008.
She's like, you're crazy. You're 40 years old. You're gonna get another. You know what?
Oh my God, that's too much pressure. Holy shit!
I was like, was like, I can't do it anymore. Just can't, you know, if I'm going to work really hard, I'm going to really hard at my own stuff.
Man, I really give you a lot of credit and I admire you and respect you for that. That's really good. It takes a lot of balls. Those are the tough decisions to make.
And the guys supported me and they were really cool. Russell and Graham. They're just great guys.
Who took that gig after you?
this guy, I forgot his name, Aaron, I think.
Aaron Paul McLean. Yeah, Aaron. Yeah, I interviewed Aaron. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's still in the band.
Yeah, and because I thought it was Aaron, because I didn't realize how far back he was, but I thought it might have been, because I met him. He was here in Orlando, so we went up to Orlando. He's a super cool dude.
Yeah. And they're really great. You know, it's just not the gig for me. I mean, it's not the gig for me. If Lindsay called me, you know, and there's a beginning and sort of an end to, if there was a gig like that, a beginning and an end or something, then that's cool. Last year I was in a musical, you know, I took it. It was rehearsals in New York for a month. And, you know, I was in the band on stage and there was actually a tiny little music, acting part.
What musical?
It was called Soul Doctor and it was rehearsed in New York, but we brought it to San Diego for a month and just played a small repertory theater. And
that's so cool.
It was good pay and it was a totally different experience than I've ever had because I had done another musical, but this was really different. And there was a lot of people in the cast. There was like 25 people in the cast. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to say yes to this. It wasn't only because of the money. It was like, this is totally out of my realm, you know?
That's great.
And I told him, I was like, listen, I don't read, you know, music. Like, I'm not in a chair, you know, in the orchestra.
That's like, a tough gig.
They're like, it's okay. It's only charts. You know, some of the stuff you can improv. And there's a part that we have for you where you teach somebody you teach the lead actor how to play on stage. You know, and there's a part we wrote for you. And I was like, okay, back to my acting.
There you go. Do you ever hang out with Jennifer Jason Leigh? I guess
not.
That was the first pause. Can I ask you the story behind that? Or no, is it too... better left unsaid?
Yeah, you know.
Oh my God. This is a brand new Janet Robin here. Totally different.
That's an off, you know, off the audio conversation.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
She's that, you know, it was 2 months was good enough for me.
I hear you. If someone told me,
go ahead.
Somebody was telling me something about they played with Hall & Oates and they said, let me tell you, John Oates is a great dude. The other guy, fuck him.
Wow, Daryl Hall.
Yeah, that's what that reminded me. Wow. Not that severe, but it was kind of like, oh, okay.
You know, I worked hard with her and just, you know, Hollywood actresses sometimes, not all of them.
Yeah.
She has had a reputation of not being the easiest person to work with. It didn't end that great, but whatever. It was a good experience. I was lived in Telluride for a month, and Kurt Russell, great guy.
Oh, that's cool.
Great. Sam Jackson, great guy. Even Tarantino, you know, I was in Telluride for a month and he knew I played my own shit. He's like, you should book a gig at this bar, sports bar. I was like, okay. And so I did. And I found, people in the town to play with and he came to my show.
That is so cool. That's really cool.
I had a 2-hour gig and he came and stayed for the whole fucking thing.
That's nice. That's really cool. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, whatever. This is all part of the tapestry of my career. It's tentacles everywhere.
But I like that you just like go out and book yourself a gig. That's what's really cool. I really dig. Remember I said I enjoyed your vibe since we first spoke. You just have that.
I said, let's talk about this shit.
Yeah. Let's get this shit going. No, but you're very, which is great. You're very like the kind of person that you impress me as someone that could do things on their own and is not afraid. And that is really, I'm really a big, you know, owning your shit is for me, like my personal philosophy is, you got to do your own thing, man.
You got to be proactive. You can't wait around for the fucking phone to ring.
Yeah.
You know, I think opportunist is a different thing, I mean, some people might look at that as, oh, you're being opportunistic, but
so
know,
what? What's wrong with that? What are you supposed to do? I mean, not make opportunities for yourself?
That's the thing. Yeah. I mean,
what? Let me not go play a gig if I can go play a gig and earn money and do what I love, playing guitar. That doesn't even make. See, when someone says something like that to me, I think that that's immaturity. Like, I mean, okay, prima donna, sit home and wait for someone to call you. Good luck with that, you know?
Right. I mean, I think it's a projection on their experience, and it depends on how you take the opportunity or you know, what you do with the opportunity, how you approach it. But
yeah, you didn't pull a Donald Trump and say, hey, you know, pay me this and then pay.
I did not do that. No.
No, but nobody does, normal people. I mean, that's not even a conversation that's worth having for us. I mean, go out there and make some opportunities and shake some trees, and that's the shit leads to other opportunities, man.
It absolutely does. And you know, I think I have to survive in this business. I didn't want another job. This is my job. So, you know, and basically when I figured out at 21, oh, I'm not going to be a rock star with precious metal, you know, no more record deal with that band or anything. I was like, okay, am I in this for the long run? Because, and I said to myself, you know, I'm pretty good at guitar. I like doing this. I like musicians, as weird as we all are. And I, these are my people. I'm going to just do this no matter what happens.
And especially coming from a family of like academic oriented, I give you a lot of credit for that. Cause that, I don't think those decisions are often easy when you're in that situation and being pressured or not pressured.
There's
an expectation. Maybe not a pressure, but an expectation. And anytime you have to deviate from something that people you care about are expecting you to do, I don't think it's probably easy.
Well, you know, I think in the end, my parents saw that they saw how much joy I have when I'm playing and performing. And, you know, I think they let that go. And they actually ended up supporting my decision to leave UCLA.
That's great. And they sound like they've been great. They sound like
you know, my mom still comes to my shows out here, and yeah, you know,
that's wonderful.
But yeah,
hey, one last question, and you might have answered it. Biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, and how much of that's been intentional, and how much is just a natural part of aging?
Oh, definitely, I answered it. As far as, you know, the older I get, the less I care about what people think. I still care what people think, but not as intensely as I did when I was younger. I'm also allowing myself to have fun.
Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it? If you're a workaholic, isn't it?
I'm a workaholic.
I struggle with that.
You know, we're going to Greece on Saturday.
Are you serious? Good for you.
An anniversary and a 10-year.
10 years.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
I'm married to a woman.
That's okay.
Thank you for your approval.
No, so it was funny. I was talking to somebody last week. I was talking to, again, Phil Collin. He was saying how, you know, he's married three times. Two of his wives have been black, and he goes, people really give me shit for that. And I'm like, you know,
really?
Wow. Yeah. And I'm like, man, who the hell has? I said, with no disrespect, Phil, but who the fuck has time to worry about your wife?
I know.
You know, like who has time to worry about? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I know.
Great,
I know.
Married to a woman. That's not. I mean, you know, like who has time to like fit that into their list of shit to be concerned about?
Yeah, people are projecting all the time. You know, it doesn't fit in their moral system or whatever. But you know, marriage is marriage. Doesn't
10
matter.
Years, man. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Listen, I just got to tell you guys, two women, think about it. This is complicated.
Oh yeah. Especially like if you're both going through menopause, man,
that's the thing. Right. And there's a lot of talking.
Shit.
There's so much talking with girls. We talk a lot.
Yeah, but that's cool.
I know.
That's cool.
But I'm saying, you know, it's challenging, you know, any relationship, marriage, you know.
Hell yeah, so, are you kidding me?
But yeah, we're going to Greece, you know. I'm like, okay, fuck it, I'm going to go have fun, but I am bringing my guitar.
Good for you. No, that's cool. Book some freaking gigs while you're out there.
Well, no, that's
off limits. Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, because then
you'd be crossing the line. Then it goes to work.
Yeah, then I get in kick mode and it's like, I can't talk to you. I'm saving my voice. You know,
I can't
drink any alcohol, you know?
No, drink alcohol and have fun. Right. That's really cool. And congratulations. 10 years is a big one. I had a situation here where Anne was going through menopause and my daughter was going through puberty.
Oh God.
And I was like, just fucking lock the door in my office and like, don't come out unless I really needed to. It was interesting.
Yeah.
So I understand that. And that's great. I'm glad you're having fun. Have a great time in Greece and happy anniversary. That's very cool.
Thank you so much.
And I wish you another many, many more years of happiness together.
Thank you.
So listen, let me tell Pete, first of all, you're a joy. Anything I could do to support your music, please let me know. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you. Likewise.
You're a warrior. I'll tell you one thing about when I talk with women, they are so much more open. Guys are open and they talk, but women, like if you listen to Pi's interview, like 5 minutes into it, she was like, well, I was homeless at age 13. And I was like, I was like, yeah, you go. She's a freaking... Right. I want her in the foxhole with me, man. You know, seriously. And women tend to be like that. I've noticed, you know, do you happen to know Vicky Genfan?
Yeah, she's a friend.
Vicky was the same way. Like 5 minutes into it, she's like, tell me about her nutty family. I'm like, wow, that was like, again, guys open up not as much about the family.
It's different.
But it's slower. Yeah. It's a slower process. Like you got to bond. And I'm if they do or don't, you know, I'm not here to judge or I have no expectations.
Yeah.
I just want to hear your story that you're willing to share. Whatever it is, I feel very lucky to be hearing that, you know. But I notice that women are like, man, let's just not waste time. Let's get boom.
Well, kind of an open book, you know. I think, you know, women in general express feelings a lot more than men. You know, guys have to put on some kind of, you know, demeanor, you know. You're in control, you know. But nobody's in control of anything.
No, absolutely not. Hey, let me tell people where to find you. First of all, it's Janet Robin, R-O-B-I-N. Check out Janet's new project and their second album called Red Drops, String Revolution. You can also find String Revolution on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Janet's got 7 CDs.
They're not all available. Some are out of print now, so you have to see what's out there.
And talk about real quick, the fan funded the last 2. So for people who are trying music, and this is all musicians listen to this, trying to get records and say, I can't listen to this.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, the first one I did with John Carter, Kickstarter was just starting. So that was, you know, way in the beginning before, you know, fan funding got really popular. I actually did it through PayPal.
Really? So you just went out to you emailed your list and said, I'm putting a record to, let me tell you, that email, nobody does email. No musicians. Good for you.
I do. I have a newsletter. Send out a newsletter every month.
I'm going to get on your list actually, just to see that because
I'll put you on. I put out a newsletter every month and so does String Revolution. And, you know, of course, look, a band or an artist is not going to be able to fan fund so much if they don't have a list.
And if you don't communicate with them, you just can't not talk with anybody. And then 6 months later, say, hey, I know you haven't heard from me ever since you signed up here. But now that I need money, I'd like to tap into you. That's not going to happen.
I think you can do some communication, you know, through social media. But there's something about email that's still more personal. So I tell everybody, you know, dudes, you got to just go old school, bring the clipboard, get people to fucking sign up their emails. So I have that at every gig and so does String Revolution. And so we also fan funded a PR campaign recently. The first time I did it, I raised like nearly 20 grand.
Congratulations. Do you have a box on your website? Enter your name and enter your email to get the newsletter. Okay, great. Good.
Yeah, okay, I do. Great. And the second time I did it, it was less money because fan funding had already happened. So 2016, when I did it, I think 10,000 or something like that. But I also needed less money. So,
but you made 2 records because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Congratulations.
And I mean, you know, and every penny went to it. I mean, it cost money. You know, I did it at Cash Cabin. I pay the engineer and the studio and John, you know, he doesn't need the money, but you know, I respect him.
You got to pay people for services. That's how it works. You know,
he is fucking great to work with.
Did you have session players?
Yeah.
Who else played?
So there are a group of different people on the first album as opposed to the second album.
Did you play any guitar guys or gals?
No.
You did all the guitar. Okay, that's what I was curious. Okay, yeah.
But great drums and bass. I can't remember everybody's name.
No worries. One guy
from Wilco, the bass player that, not the main guy. He was in I can't remember. Anyway, so they're all really good players and great guys.
Yeah, they're very cool there.
They got my shit right away, and it was awesome. And it was a great experience being in Nashville. But it costs money, you know, costs money. And the PR and everything costs money.
Well, sign up to Janet's list. And it's just janetrobin.com or is it Janet Robin?
Yeah.
Okay, janetrobin.com. Please sign up to Janet's list and get a String of Evolution. Is it stringofevolution.com?
Yes. The String Revolution.com
and sign up on all her lists because if you're a musician, you need to check out what she's doing because you need to take advice, you know, do what she's doing because it's working. Also, Janet teaches, as she mentioned earlier, if you're in the LA area, she'll teach you in person. And if you are not, she will teach you on Skype or FaceTime. So, and she's a really super cool. And you know what? You'd probably be a really good mentor.
Well, I do it a lot to my people. Students.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I'll go see some of my students when they book a gig. I go see them, cheer them on. Yeah.
Very cool.
I love that. Yeah.
Facebook, it's Janet Robin Music. And Instagram and Twitter, it's Janet Robin. And anything else that I forgot or that you'd like to mention that I didn't cover?
I think it's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, one thing I remembered about Randy, and I think this is a good closer because working with him obviously set me on a path, you know, with guitar. But I forgot to mention that one of the most important things I learned from him was how to write a song. And I mean it in the way of from the standpoint of guitar. And since this is a podcast about guitar, you know, it's coming back slowly, but you know, the music that we grew up on famous guitar riffs, right?
Yeah.
The song, a lot of them, they would start with this riff and you were like automatically knew what the song was. And they're so melodic and just set the song, you know, on its path. And I learned that from him, you know, come up with a cool guitar lick and that will help you write songs. And we're missing a little bit of that now.
Why do you think that is?
Well, we've got through a lot of different styles. You know, I think guitar got lost in the 80s, in the new wave 80s, you know?
Yes.
And in the 90s, it became more of a, you know, it was not cool to do solos in the 90s at all. Yeah. It was like all about, you know, rhythm and, you know, grungy, you know, and it was all about the vibe, which is cool, but different. So we're kind of trying to get back to that. Some of the younger bands trying to get back to doing the solos. I'm not saying you have to shred in every song. Yeah. It's not about that. I certainly learned that from Lindsay too. He doesn't shred in every song. It has to be like the right type of solo per song. But I, as far as like writing a song, there's nothing wrong with having, I was just listening to Vampire Weekend, their new song that they have on, God, I can't remember it, but it starts out with this cool riff. And I'm like, yeah, where's the fucking players now? You know, I mean, it starts with this cool riff and that riff continues, you know, it's a theme throughout the song. And I'm like, We need that, yeah. You know? Yeah. So I learned that from him because all of our progressions we did started out with some kind of lick and it just seeped into me. And of course, you know, he's famous for that.
Yeah.
I mean, Crazy Train, one of the most famous riffs ever.
Yes, for sure.
You know, and you listen to any Hendrix song, famous riffs, Jimmy Page, famous riffs, you know, so we're on a podcast about guitar. You guys out there, if you're writing songs, you're the writer in the band and you're the guitar player, don't forget about starting the song with a riff and making it a theme.
Righteous. There you go. Listen, you're a real pleasant human being and I really enjoy talking to you. Thank you for everything. Thanks for all your energy and for bringing it and finally got this shit done. So
thank you for having me. And anytime
8 o'clock in the morning, anytime for you.
Yes, you are awesome. I can't believe how much you got, how energetic you are. Everybody, listen, thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this, share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Please check out Janet Robin and listen to her music. Again, it's janetrobin.com and on Facebook, Janet Robin Music, thestringrevolution.com. Check out the String Revolution's new record and support Janet when she goes out on tour, man. Go see her. I got a lot of people out in LA in the Northern California area. Say hello. Buy her merch. Fund her next freaking anniversary trip to somewhere, right? make sure you go to everyoneknowsguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.